Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, emotion worker, and live Okie. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Brian. I am a live Okie.
Yes, you are.
What a wonderful weekend.
You just experienced your first live Oak, right?
Well, that was not my first, but it was my first active live Oak where I was there interacting with the artists and grabbing interviews. And so, yeah, it was a working live Oak
great.
For me. And it was a great experience. So, yeah, I'm riding the high right now.
Yeah, everybody around here still is. We're still clearing some dust out of our ears.
I washed my hair finally, so that's a good thing. But yeah, I'm looking forward to today's show because this weekend kind of marks a transition for me in ways and for you and I in ways, because we'll be parting ways for a long period of time. This is my last week in the studio for 6 weeks. I'm taking the show on the road, which, you know, I've been talking about for over a year. Wouldn't mm-hmm. it be great? Take the show on the road.
Right.
Just how would that work? So finally, you know, we've been kind of working out the bugs and practice doing some interviews and talking to people on location and gathering some material. And so today we're kind of transitioning my life in the studio in with my remote conversations that I had with some of the artists at Live Oak this weekend and see how they all blend together. And then next week I'll be bringing you stories from different locations. We're starting this journey in Denver. We're flying to Denver, my husband and I, and then we're driving. So let me just say, because my husband's a great sport, that the original location destination was to Lincoln, Nebraska, because I'm doing an interview there, with Mary Piper. And I can't wait to share her story with you. The book she's probably most known for is Reviving Ophelia. But that was our first location. But then when I looked at the map and saw we had 4 days to get there, I said, I've never seen Mount Rushmore. That doesn't look very far. Mm-hmm. So we're going from Denver up through South Dakota, Mount Rushmore and Rapid City and whatever is along the way there, and then down into Lincoln, Nebraska, and then into Kansas City, where we'll be seeing Dave Matthews' band. I'm not sure Dave is going to want to sit down with me backstage, but I will be in the audience. And then my husband flies home, and I'm by myself the rest of the way out from Kansas City across to New Jersey. And so hopefully stopping and having conversations along the way. Because I, aside from wanting to kind of take this journey myself, I really want to talk to people about what their life is like for them. What is their experience of being an American? Or what is their experience living in this country at this time? How are they feeling? And I want to bring home some of their stories and share them with you. And I don't know, just kind of shake it up. I think it's good to, you know, break the routine we talked about a couple of weeks ago, how important, you know, these vacations, these time away from our day-to-day are, not just for our mental health, but very much for our mental health and physical health, but also to bring some novelty to our life, to bring back that sense of awe, that sense of wonder, get out of our comfort zone, feel a little anxious. Believe me, I've been feeling incredibly anxious about taking this on. But it's important to do those things. And, you know, I push my students all the time about getting out of their comfort zone and trying things that they would never try. And so I'm doing a little bit of putting my, you know, walking my talk this summer to see how it goes. So today is a confluence of many different conversations, a little bit of my eavesdropping, some thoughts and events, all that intersected in interesting ways to me to kind of come up with today's show. So here are all the pieces. The 4th of July, which is pending. You would think it was tomorrow, the way that people have already started firing fireworks off in our neighborhood. It seems to be a month-long celebration rather than one day. But the 4th of July and the marking of our country's loud and disruptive birth of a nation and all that went into that. And, you know, I'm always wondering when I look around, would we have the will for that kind of revolution today? I don't know if I would take my musket in hand and be able to go down and fight for something. I mean, it just, what it took for these farmers and these religious people and people of various backgrounds and belief systems to come together, right, to fight for their freedom as a group, even though as individuals, they had very different worldviews and perspectives and religious orientations, but they were able to come together in a common effort to build this place that would allow them the freedom of expression and opportunity and ability to choose a life that they so wanted to live. And I wonder now, you know, going into 2016 or in 2016, do we still have that will as a nation? And do we have that grace for those around us who have different perspectives, different worldviews, different orientations? You know, even with our own, within our own liberal community, do we have grace for each other with different takes on it? I mean, could we come together to have a common experience? So that's on my mind. And along that line, I overheard a conversation. A woman was talking about the need to find those people that organized the marches back in the day. We need to get those people back out here so we can have big marches on Washington like they did in the 60s and in the 70s. You know, we need those people to lead us through these next efforts. And she was talking primarily about gun control and wanting. But I was thinking, well, those people were the people of their time standing up for the issues of their time, whether it be civil rights or the feminist movement or ending the war in Vietnam, or, you know, the issues of the time that are still the issues of today. But we probably shouldn't be tapping into them. We need to find that activism right within ourselves. And it, once again, do we have the will or the ability to come together to go march on the Capitol when it's so easy to pull out my phone and, you know, tap my name and change.org? Does that still count for showing up in Washington? I don't know. The other piece where all my passionate peers I've been having conversations with, you know, and I think we're all having these conversations about what's going on in the political world right now. And this idea that we need a political revolution of some kind, and wondering, you know, what kind of, do we have the stomach for that kind of change? Do we really want to, you know, because to me it keeps going back to this idea of revolution. Revolution, is it loud and violent? You know, are we going to, you know, march together? Are we going to have disruption? Are we going to take over the White House? Are we going to dismantle the government as we know it? I wonder if we're capable of that, because I don't know if we're all really that uncomfortable enough to do something that bold. And maybe things are too complex in our culture now to do something that bold. Maybe we don't have just a simple, you know, a simple idea that we're all fighting for, and that would keep us from having some even political revolution of ousting political parties and rebuilding it from the ground up. And could we get people to agree enough of what that looks like? Because if you look at, you know, Trump on one side and Bernie Sanders on the other side, right, people seem to follow them for the same idea, which is we need change, and yet they would never come together as one big group behind either one of them. They still would be in factions. And then, of course, being at Live Oak this weekend and talking to the artists, I didn't really have a goal of what kind of story I was trying to pull out of them, but I kind of had this idea of, you know, what is it that drives them to doing this work? Why music? And I know, Brian, that's your life is music. And so I was always curious, you know, you're either the most grounded individuals, artists who play music for a living, or you're the most lofty, untethered group, because, and music somehow grounds you.
That sounds more accurate to me, the latter of the two.
And I think that's what I heard over and over again from the artists that I spoke to, that music is what gives their life this central sense of grounding and a place to come together. So today, I want to pull together all those ideas and talk about change and what cost of change and how do we actually bring about change. Will we have, you know, will there be a riotous revolution of any kind or disruption like we saw in the 60s where people are taking to the streets and burning neighborhoods and, you know, marching and losing their lives? You know, those were not bloodless revolutions in the 60s, as it was not in the 1700s. But somewhere in my mind, I can't imagine 2016 being the year of another, I don't know, bloody summer. I don't know what other word to use, or activist summer. And is it possible to bring about great change, great social meaningful change, without having it become loud and violent and riotous? Can we have a quiet revolution, quiet change happening? You know, because much of the energy I feel, and I don't know how you, but much of the energy I feel is about these screams, these desperate pleas for action, right? Whether it comes to the environment or women's reproductive health or gender inequality, education inequities, economic disparity, gun control, violence. You know, just people want desperately for something to change. But everything is coming at us loud and fast and relentless all the time, 24-hour news cycles. You know, everything feels overwhelming and doom and despair. And I wonder if that much overload shuts us down and causes us to retreat. And then we feel helpless. And so I'm wondering if the revolution that we seek won't happen in our face, but will be much more quiet. It'll be much more maybe of a personal revolution, a family revolution. Because, of course, the world I delve into or live in is family, right? As a psychotherapist and being a mom and a grandma and working with families, you know, that one of the most significant changes we've seen, along with all of the social changes and political changes and environmental changes, are changes within the family. You know, the way the family is structured. It has not been a stable unit for a long period of time. You know, starting with the Industrial Revolution, where the family structure went from being mostly agrarian, the parents were pretty egalitarian, children, you know, people had lots of children because they're of an asset to support the family farm and to keep the family going. So there was a high value on children. So, you know, fathers and mothers were involved in the raising of children and teaching them morals and values and educating them to take on the family farm. But with the Industrial Revolution, you know, all of a sudden there wasn't the big need for large families. Fathers were removed from the family system in a lot of ways because they were going into factories to work all day long. Women were, you know, relegated to the home and taking care of the economy of the household and child rearing. And then, of course, World War II comes and women are back, you know, in the workforce and men are fighting and families are disrupted. And then we come back after World War II and we step into the 50s. And remember, the 50s is that what makes America great that everyone talks about, that time that was supposed to be perfect. But it was far less than perfect because we, again, were still struggling to figure out what the family unit looks like. How do we best support members of the family? And at that time, you know, it was very traditional. Women were at home taking care of, they were booted out of the workforce post-World War II. Thank you for serving. Now go home and take care of your family. So women now are relegated back into, you know, the home life, and men are given the role as, you know, driver of the family economy financially, and they're kind of distance from the children. You know, the common social practice in child rearing that men were really disengaged. It wasn't that fathers were purposely disengaged, but it was really the socializing of individuals and families with those expectations in those roles. So then we move into the 60s and we have the great social revolution and the changing of roles once again with the feminist movement and women entering the workforce and back, you know, going into education in great numbers. And we have this, the greatest disruption in family in the history of our country at that period of time. The highest rate of divorce is well over 50%. A lot of fathers became weekend dads who eventually gave up when they weren't able to maintain connections with their children. And so as a result, we went into, you know, the 80s and the 90s with still shifting roles. What does marriage look like? Is it still viable? A lot of children being raised in daycare and childcare. Again, all these fluxes. And then here we are in 2016. And what I see is this quiet revolution that has occurred where we now have over 2 million stay-at-home dads. The amount of fathers staying home with their children has risen 60% since 1987. 16% of families with young children have dads, fathers, as their stay-at-home provider. And 40% of the breadwinners in families today are women. And so maybe what's quietly happening is the change in family structure and what we value and what we're willing to fight for. Maybe it's more about the simplicity and the stepping aside from the economic driven materialistic 80s, you know, and maybe because things have become so expensive and so hard to grasp and so hard to keep up with that people are pulling back. So that's the conversation today. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Today we're talking about what it takes to bring about change. And I keep using the word revolution, you know, and revolution in the sense of movement, movement towards change. We will be opening up the phones to take your calls at 805-781-3875. You can always find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. If you want to call in and you're a little nervous about going on the air, Brian's always happy to hear you out and share your thoughts and comments. But I want to start with I want to keep stirring. I want to keep stirring the pot a little bit.
I got excited.
I know. I'm excited for this too. To talk about some of the things that I talked to the artists backstage. One of the questions I asked was, you know, there's a lot of talk about revolution, but what I seems to be missing is that soundtrack for the revolution. You know, what drives action and movement? It seems like in the 60s, and maybe it's because I've watched too many movies about the 60s, but it seemed like, you know, underneath the feminist movement, underneath the civil rights movement, underneath, you know, all of the changing tides of the 60s, there was music, protest music, and sounds of, you know, of despair or sounds of action kind of drove that. And I was wondering, like, where is that? Does that music exist? And why, maybe I'm just ignorant. Why am I not hearing it? So my conversation with Liliana and Dan from Candelaria, Liliana, I asked her, where is that soundtrack for the revolution? The 60s had one, but where is it today? And this is what she had to say.
I think it's just the nature of the beast. I mean, the music industry has changed dramatically from the 60s. And so now it's, you know, working. I also do jingles and I do other, you know, forms of music. And so it's, you know, many times the driving force is that commercial, you know, unit sales. And, you know, those are the driving forces behind those soundtracks sometimes, unfortunately. But that's why it's good to look beyond those borders in music and in the industry itself, and it's out there. I can guarantee it. It's out there. It's just not always commercialized. That's the difference for me, at least.
So even Blowing in the Wind was a pop hit.
Right, and exactly. Exactly. Right, because the industry permitted that to happen, but now it's really changed. I mean, dramatically in that time. So I encourage folks to look. You know, that's what one of the reasons I love public radio is that you can find those outlets. You can find those artists that are doing that very meaningful work that goes beyond just selling CDs. You know, it's beyond that. And there are many people out there that do it, and you just have to look for them. And this festival and many of these festivals serve as a great outlet for those sources.
So, Dan, last question. Do you think we will have a loud revolution led by music, or are we going to have just a quiet continuation of the status quo?
Well, I know that behind every behind every revolution, you do need a soundtrack from Irish bar jingles to be, for the IRA to the farm worker songs you had with Cesar Chavez. I don't think you really can have a revolution without music. So I think it's going to be big and be loud.
So what do you think, Brian? Is it going to be big and be loud? I mean, you're of the generation behind me.
I can't see it being big and loud at this point. I really wish it would be, though. But
do you hear music out there, as Liliana was talking about? Because she, prior to this clip, she had talked about being really involved with labor music. You know, she has a Mexican-American background, and so she's in there, you know, and says, there's a lot of protest music and labor music and a lot of people working. We just don't see it because it's not been marketed or commercialized.
Exactly.
But do you, in your world of musicians, do you hear a rumbling of trying to bring in music that invokes change?
I'm actually a part of a band that's kind of starting to do that right now. I didn't want to sit here and promote my own band, but yeah, I'm in a group that they got together because one, they like one style of music, and two, they feel like they want their voice. We want our voice to be heard and to get some thoughts and some people thinking about what's going on and what could be better and how to do it.
And so I guess it goes back to, and that's when I open up, you know, to listeners too. Do you think we have the will for change Is there something that will drive us forward? And what is that thing that needs to change? Because I think, you know, maybe one of the problems is there's too many things that concern us, right? There's so many things from the environment to social inequalities to economic inequalities that you can't choose one, so you shut down, as I mentioned before. But if there was one thing that you would like, you know, us all to come together and have be different, what would that one thing be? What do you think is that unit for change? You know, the Revolutionary War was freedom from oppression from England. And so that was a known enemy to break free from. So what is our one cause that would unite us? 805-781-3875 is a number to be part of this conversation. I'm talking about change and revolution. And do we need a soundtrack? And what would be on that soundtrack? What is music you have heard that would be, you know, leading the charge of that? Is there a blowing in the wind that's out there playing? I mean, Beyonce did some pretty powerful protest music with, you know, Formation and her new album Lemonade. I mean, there's music that's happening out there. But is it enough? Is, you know, will it just then become co-opted and commercialized, much like other things that happened in the 60s? Or will it be, you know, continue to stay real or pure? Will we have that ability to keep the intention of change moving forward? And then, as I brought it before again, you know, and we just had Father's Day this weekend also, and I'm looking at this quiet revolution within families and how we're forming families. And, you know, research now looking at young married couples, what they're seeing is a shift in why they've come together and got married. You know, traditionally for years, couples came together to join their assets, to provide for each other, to build a family together. It was a partnership, a contract, you know, had the emotion work of the woman and the resource work of the father coming together. And then that all blew up post-feminist movement. You know, women were feeling like they could do this on their own and didn't need men to be in the picture. And, you know, we're going to raise children on their own. And then following that, we had the soulmate marriages of the 80s where people were looking, you know, they wanted an equal. They wanted someone who fulfilled them, completed them, and that soulmate marriage was almost transcended the idea of having family or worrying about your economic viability. It was all about love and commitment. And now, though, a lot of the talk is about these families, these couples who've come together to raise children together, that their marriage is about raising a family together and putting all their efforts into the work of raising children. And I wonder if that will be the revolution, that if enough people commit to the family unit, this tribe, right, that we create, this clan that supports us, that brings about enough quiet change that the economy, the politics, the government has to follow the changes that we've all quietly made. I don't know. What do you think? 805-781-3875. And I always want to ask, you know, about the Father's Day piece too, because Father's Day does not get the press that Mother's Day does. And I think we still have a lot of issues around the role of fathers in family. And a lot of people have mixed emotions about that. 805-781-3875. Hi, Amanda. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. Oh, what's not on my mind? I don't know. I'm so excited to be on the air and just talking with you. I'm just so happy to hear all your words and happy to know that everything I've been working for so long is finally, like, coming to life. And it's real now, and it just feels really good.
So I can hear that.
Oh, thank you so much.
So tell me what exactly resonates with you, because I can hear that there's something that's really sparked you.
I don't know. It's just everything almost. It's everything you're saying. I feel I've been trying to spread so much of this word to everybody as much as I can, and I start to feel preachy. Like, I don't know if it's too much, but it's like it's never too much to just be who you are and just be accepted and know that there's obviously not one way that 6.4 billion people are supposed to live to a certain standard, and it's like rigid, and I'm not shining with the essence of my being like I should be, and it's just all kerfuffled. It's all I don't know. It's like there's a clock, you know. Everybody feels the energy so strong, and it's so powerful. Why, like, I was never taught that in school. I was taught to believe all these things that I never ever confused, and they actually only set me back. Really, they slow me down because they're limiting, but that's not really the way it is. And I see why it happened like that, because it was a new time and a new place, and it was time to discover. And, like, now we work so hard, and I feel like now we can finally reap the benefits. So it's a really good time to be alive.
Oh, Amanda, I love hearing your joy, because it is. I agree that it is a really beautiful time to be alive, and I think your energy, your enthusiasm is out there, and that's why I think I get sad that the 24-hour news cycle wants to keep us terrified and afraid and in the bad news of the world, when I hear more of your energy out there, this anticipation, this excitement of consciousness that people are saying, yeah, we're all already living the change. We just need the government to catch up.
Yeah, it's like the war is over, you know, we won. It's slowly being, we already defeated I don't know what you would call that, the force, I guess, that was so, it had built so much momentum, you know. People came to America and they had they were like, oh, shoot, like, we can do anything. And then the power maybe got, they had so much power right there, and it was so strong, and they were just like, yeah, it was like, must have been intense. And so that energy wave kind of just like kind of went out, and it's dissipating now. And it's a new transition. It's a revolutionary, you said it perfectly. It's a very revolutionary time. It's like Jesus, you know, it's just everything. It's a cycle change, and that the war is over, you know, we won. So now we're trying to adjust to the fact that we can do whatever we want, because we all have our own power, and nobody can have anyone else's power. Everyone on the planet has the power, their divine power, I call it, or for a woman, divine woman power. Everyone has their magic power, and it's never the same as anybody else's, and nobody can ever have yours, and it's always, you're better at something in some way than everyone else on the whole planet. But that's how much variation and opportunity that is, like, infinitely happening and arising all the time everywhere.
Beautifully said, Amanda. And I love that, because maybe the revolution happens with a more positive focus. Maybe we bring about, you know, this change again by the shifting of our relationships, the way we interact with each other when we are together, the way that we come together as community. And one of the other, you know, another person I had a conversation with was Mike Miranda from the Mike and Ruthie Band. And he travels with his family, and we were talking about community and why he likes going out on the road with his band, and the sense of forming a community and how it makes a difference in his life.
There's music in our life constantly, be it at performances of ours or others or festivals. And one thing we made a concerted effort to do this year was really get back on the festival circuit, because we love the community of bands, but also just the people in these communities where festivals take place. It's I love to see the energy between people, and I guess as a hired band, just sort of fan that flame a little bit and put our energy out into the space. And like they always said about music, it's an exchange of energy. It's very beautiful whether there's words or not. Most of our songs have words, and we're trying to get across just our experience of being human beings in 2016, which is no small feat, you know. So just trying to keep it real and just tell our story and not make it too complicated. Just like Woody Guthrie, just look out the window and write down what you see. It's sort of what we try and do with our work.
And so maybe that's all it's about, is each of us kind of figuring out what our story is and living that story authentically. You know, I think the key, though, is we have to be able to get quiet enough in our lives to hear what our truth or our story is. And I think that's where it makes it a challenge, because we do have so much going on 24/7 with the news and our jobs and our children and technology and intensity. Like, when is it ever quiet enough for you to hear what your own story is? And when do we have time as a family just to be together and to figure out who we are and to create our mission statement as a family, right? To create our values, to create our sense of belonging as a family. And then once we have that unit organized, then to take that story on the road and be able to share it with others is huge. And that's why I think is so great about this musical community, especially the musicians I spoke to this weekend, is that many of them are traveling with their family. They are on the road building their life authentically around their family, and music supports that. Instead of, I think, what our culture would like us to do is build our life around our work or the culture and have our family be kind of a sidelight. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're listening to Public Radio, KCBX. You're welcome to be part of the conversation at 805-781-3875. And Jolynn, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes, I've been listening to you. Fabulous topic. I am a local musician. I live in Santa Maria. I released a CD recently called Just Breathe and a new video to a song called One World. And in this, it came from a lot of tragedy in my life that woke me up, so to speak, that got me tapped in and turned on to the world around us and how beautiful it is instead of looking at always the negative. Many of the songs that I have written are about, you know, the phrase, we're the ones we've been looking for. And I think it's not a revolution, if I may say so. I'm using the word evolution. You know, it's the evolution of the spirit, the human being, that's changing and shifting. And I see it all around me, especially when I play my live shows. You know, people are coming up to me very moved by the music, and it's wonderful. Instead of the old days when I was in a female rock band and it was all about playing copies and banging your head and drinking a lot, you know, it's really taken a turn.
And so do you think that we have, you know, I always think about the potential we saw in the 1960s, you know, and the idea that same coming together with love and making space for each other and, you know, getting back to the simplicity. And then we lost that vibe and that momentum, that energy that we keep talking about. Then we feel, I think there are so many people feeling this energy again, and they're either feeling this energy in kind of the violent terrorist aggressive way, or they're feeling that same energy, but it's coming out in this emotive, love-driven, positive way. You know, but do you think that we have the ability to ride that out long enough, or do we ultimately, do all revolutions end up in a whimper and we kind of continue on from there?
You know, I may not have the answer, but I know in the work that I'm doing, I've decided to take my music and do it for a positive shifting within the person. Mm-hmm. I think separation definitely is killing us. It killed us. We decided to separate ourselves somewhere along the line, and we've just got numb to it. And now there's a shift that's happening where we're seeing that we need to come together and connect again. Mm-hmm. Music's always been a bonding situation. Always at concerts, you have people. If the musicians can band together, I play my stuff in 432 hertz, specifically because of the healing vibration tone it has. I'd love to see musicians doing that, taking all their music, whatever kind of music they play, and putting in that hertz instead of the 440. There's a lot of different things that are out there.
Absolutely.
And it's time.
It is time, Jolynn. Thank you for taking the time to call. And, you know, what Jolynn talked about, kind of the sound of the music and the healing or the supportive sound that we hear when we're listening to music really impacts our sense of well-being or how we take it in. And it's funny because one of the other conversations I had was with Lesh Rosinski from the California Honey Drops. And I had a great... We went all over the place with conversations, but one of the things he was talking about was the difference between, he doesn't want his music to be attacking or attack people or go after them, you know, that he wants it to feel good and nurturing and invite the audience in. And he said, you know, we challenge our audience politically sometime, but we're looking for something more than that.
We have a few songs that are political in nature, and we try to challenge the audience a little bit to step outside of, you know, where they're thinking sometimes, and that's a part of it, and that's important to do, but how you do that is really important too, because a lot of the political music is preaching to the choir. Most people that are convinced or listen to that music, it's a reinforcement of what they already believe, right? So how revolutionary is that? I mean, I'm not saying it's bad, and I'm not saying that those people don't need something to listen to get themselves fired up for the fight every day, because it's a, you know, it's a hard battle, and it's a losing battle a lot of the time. You know, it's a kind of, you know, one step forward, two steps back game with progress, you know, in our political system. And so I think that music is great, but I also think it's good to challenge people on a more personal level as well. You know, just, hey, turn around, say hello to somebody next to you. You know, acknowledge that you're surrounded by other humans at the show. You know, just being polite, being, and how you talk to your people. Say, how, what about people that aren't convinced of your position yet? Aren't convinced about the need for a revolution? How do you talk to those people? You know, and how do you convince them? And I think, you know, sometimes you need a might need a gentler approach to change a person's mind. You got to meet them halfway. You got to listen to what they're saying. And so I think there's a lot of different ways to be political and a lot of different ways to encourage the change that you want to see in the world.
Now, so Lesh echoed what a lot of artists were saying backstage, was that it's about this community. It's about coming together. It's about being kind to one another, to having conversations with people from different backgrounds. What so many people said about Live Oak is that, you know, standing side by side with people with very different belief systems and very different backgrounds, and they let that go and come in the door, and they're there all for the same reason, which is to kind of love and express and feel at peace and kind of check out in ways and join in other ways. And it's powerful. And to be able to have that experience, you know, maybe the change comes because we keep modeling this different way of being, that there are these artists out there that are presenting their music in different ways. And somehow that changes how we as audiences accept or hear that music. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. And we're talking about change, revolution. Is it in the air? Do you feel it? You know, it sounds like the 60s are erupting all over again. If you talk to people in the political arena or in the environmental movement or from the reproductive rights movement, gender equality movement, there is a lot of energy out there for change. And yet it's not a loud and violent change, but a more loving based direction towards change. So I'd love to know what you think about this. And do you see the revolution happening in your family or in families around you? This change in partnership between men and women and how we raise children, will we raise another generation that has a whole different way of viewing the world? If we're all involved in the raising of our children in one generation, we can change what our children want for their lives, and they'll demand it. 805-781-3875. Mickey, you're on the air. What's on your mind? Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, what's on your mind today?
My name is Mickey.
Hi.
And I actually am a product of the civil rights movement. My parents were both involved in the Congress of Racial Equality in Southern California. My father went to Selma and was involved in one of the marches. They weren't allowed to, you know, cross the Pettus Bridge at that time. But one of the earlier marches. And as a 9-year-old kid, I was making and carrying picket signs on protest marches for support of the Rumford Fair Housing Act. We were kind of driving to change the ruling that went on in Southern California that we're still fighting today, by the way, mm-hmm. For the right of people to move into neighborhoods and live there regardless of their color, gender, background, you know, where they came from. Now, what I'm calling about is that two things, okay? First of all, the civil rights movement chose the music that they wanted to use during their demonstrations, and that became the voice of that time. So We Shall Overcome was chosen by the civil rights movement. Walk Right In, Sit Right Down was chosen by the civil rights movement as a kind of a vocal expression of what the intention was, which was to get the attention of the American public and make them aware of the fact that there was so much racism going on in our country. And I'm speaking as a person who lived in Los Angeles, and this was going on. This was very heavy-handedly going on in the L.A. area. So it's the movement itself, whatever that movement is, that ends up actually being the source that chooses the music. Mm-hmm. And the music itself, in its own way, was either very, you know, very intense and focused, very, very religious, as We Shall Overcome was, which is an old 100s piece of music out of the old the Protestant tradition. And Walk Right In, Sit Right Down was music that was, you know, that kind of folky music that was popular during that period, like, you know, I Had a Hammer and all these others, okay? But the point that I'm trying to make here is that it was the movement that chose those and sung those. They sung those in common at all of these events. And that's how that happens. So it's encouraging the people out there who are musicians, singers, songwriters, to come up with a focus on something that has meaning. Well, there are, as you were saying, it's so diffuse. There are so many different ways of expressing this kind of quiet revolution that we have almost too many revolutions to put our you know, stamp on. Now, the other point that I wanted to bring up is about a realistic revolution about our environment. Because I will say, quite frankly, that regardless of what we may want to have for families, seeking for better family relations or better, you know, LGBTQ rights or whatever our concerns are, if we don't have a decent environment to live in, then all of these other issues are become, unfortunately, I guess, secondary.
And, you know, Mickey, that's a great point, because one of the things I brought up was, what would be that one thing, right? We have this diffuse collection of things that we're worried about, but maybe the environment, maybe climate change and environmental protection, that becomes the rallying cry. That becomes our fight against, you know, England or whatever drives great revolutions. Maybe that's the story that we keep pitching, is that I agree. And it's interesting, because I was having a conversation with a young college student about the same thing. He said, I'm having such a hard time getting worked up about all of these inequities in our culture and people, you know, not feeling like they have equal access. He said, because all I keep thinking is, none of this is going to matter if the world comes to an end or the environment is destroyed. I can only think about that. So maybe he's echoing what you're saying, what a lot of people are saying, is that it needs to be about the environment. And then what is the music that supports that movement? Who will be singing out? What, you know, This Little Light of Mine, or Mr. Sun, Mr. Golden Sun. I'm trying to think of songs that you probably sing to your kids, Brian, to Kieran. But what is that music that moves it along? Last thoughts, Mickey?
In terms of the music itself, I don't have a direct answer for that one. But what I wanted to say about this, and the truth is that there will be music for this, undoubtedly, because we're going to reach a point where in which we're either going to be so despairing about what is happening on a planetary basis, or we're going to make a concerted effort of combining and pulling the music together. You know, there's a film coming out about Yo-Yo Ma and the Silk Road music that he helped to bring together. It's going to be at the Palm. It's coming up. We just saw the trailer on this, my husband and I. And I think that in its own right, music that pulls together all cultures and asks all cultures to focus only and with very few words. I mean, of course, his music is orchestral, but with just a few words, something very, very simple, very subtle, but that says it. about this whole, mess, that, for lack of a better word.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mickey. You know, and it's true. And I think the last caller talked about it also, that the music itself can inspire people towards action. I was talking to Nick and Kirk from Bear Market Riot the first morning, and they were talking about, you know, what I said, what does music bring to you? And I said, it can lift me up, or it can bring me away from a problem. He said, if I don't have music, I know that it's going to be a struggle, you know, that it sets up the whole feeling. And then in my conversation with Sarah Jarosz, she's young. She just turned 25. So she's of the, you know, low end of the millennials. And she's out there doing her thing and sharing her story and spreading her thoughts and her feelings. And so I asked her, you know, how will the revolution happen? Do you feel this sense of need for change, energy, revolution out there in your generation when you're on tour, when you're writing music? Are you feeling like something needs to happen or is going to happen? What are your thoughts on this? And this is what Sarah Jarosz said.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, personally, at least at this young stage in my life, I don't right now feel like a political musician. I haven't chosen to write about those things up until this point. Maybe I'm not afraid to. Maybe I will at some point. But I think it's maybe more of a thing of with social media and just the way that the world kind of works now, being so internet driven, and my sense is that people are longing for an honest and pure thing more than ever before. And so maybe more than like being a super outspoken political artist, it might be that the movement becomes just being raw and honest and true, and not like totally overblown in a super in-your-face kind of public way, if that makes sense, and that people are really longing for that honesty within art and music, you know, as always, but maybe more than ever before, because, you know, media and everything is so oversaturated these days.
And so that's, again, a theme that comes up a lot with students, with my friends, with my coworkers. You and I talk about this, Brian, that, you know, how do we just get to the simple? How do we just get to the meat of life, to the truth of life, to the things that really matter? And, you know, again, having a planet that can sustain life is key, and especially those that are raising children and you know, and wanting them to have a place where they can get outside and breathe the air and enjoy the music and enjoy life. I think, you know, all the noise out there, the materialism, the opportunities to purchase and buy and be exposed to the latest and greatest, that luster wears off when you see the long-term effect it has on our environment or our quality of life. But I think there is this theme of wanting honesty and authenticity and the real and simple and things that really matter. And, you know, it goes back to me again, those relationships inherent in our family, and how we build those relationships and how we honor those relationships. And then I keep thinking as a therapist, you know, what we should be doing is taking our therapy show on the road and teaching communication skills and conversation skills and relating skills and all the things we've been trained to do to help people to overcome those barriers to connectivity, because that, you know, the connecting is so strong, the desire to be together with all sorts of people and to turn and say hello and feel supported, or to be with those we love the most and feel supported and safe, because sometimes in a world of strangers we feel more authentic and alive than we do in our own home with our family around the dinner table. And so how do we teach those skills to make that primary relationship at home feel like a supportive, safe place, and a place where we can all thrive, and then take that energy out to do more in the world? And how, and I just keep thinking, so if it's all about the environment, right? If it's all about that everything else pales, then what does that revolution look like? How, you know, do we have, you know, a model of the planet? Do we make a mascot of the globe that we take on the road? And, you know, remember the Hands Across America and the big We Are the World? Like, is it time for that? Do We Are the World, but actually the world is the world? You know, And where does that energy come from? I'm feeling like I'm sounding a little bit like the woman who said, we need those people that organized marches in the 60s to come back. Because I'm saying we need those young people, your generation, or we need the older people, you know, who've been down there, who saw the 60s, who saw maybe what went wrong, and but still have the energy. Because if we're living to be 90 years old and still really functioning, then from 70 to 90, there's a lot of mentoring that needs to happen to pass down that wisdom. You know, those that are 70 to 90 or 90 to 100, you know, they lived a full life. You've lived a full life of inspiration and lessons learned and disappointment. And so how do you pass that on and help encourage and nurture the next generation who, frankly, keeps trying to reinvent the wheel when it comes to parenting and relationships, when we know that common sense and that old wisdom in many ways is the best way of just keeping it together, keeping it simple? One of the last clips I had was also from my conversation with Mike from the Mike and Ruthie Band. And he, like many of the other artists, he and his wife, Ruthie, travel with their family. And, you know, so I talked to him about, you know, why is it important to you to be with your family? You know, what is it that it brings to you as a family to be on the road together? And this is what Mike had to say.
Well, the cliche about being a musician is that you're always leaving someone behind. And that's true for many, many of our friends, and we don't take it for granted. You know, we're touring as a 5-piece band, and some of our band members have families back home. In fact, we just had 3 days off, and our drummer Conrad grabbed a flight out of Denver and went to spend 3 days with his family. And he's got it dialed in. You do what you got to do on the road, you know. We're lucky that we are always together. We don't miss each other the way a lot of musicians miss their family. Of course, the flip side of that is we're always together. We're cooped up in a narrow little tube of a van, hurling down the highways and trying to be as safe as we can. But we have a lot of adventures together, a lot of memories that we've forged together. And what used to be a day off back in the mammals days where we would, who knows what we would do? I can't even say on the radio, probably. But now we go to a museum, or we go find a swimming hole, or, you know, a mini golf course, or an aquarium. I've seen more museums in America than a lot of people, I would say. And I think our kids dig the rhythm of it. They learn a lot about our country, the landscape, where their food comes from. We're always trying to instill. You know, we live in the Hudson Valley of New York, and a lot of food is grown there. But when we get organic, red, fresh strawberries from California in New York, and they cost whatever, $12. And then you come to California and you say, this is where they were grown, guys. And it's not lost on them. They get it. You know, as little kids, just putting together how the whole system works and not taking for granted our food and how delicate the system is of transportation, of all the things we take for granted. I think when you get out into the world, you start to put the connect the dots a little bit easier, you know.
And so is it really, you know, is it about just being together? It was interesting because Sean Rao, who I also talked to, and he's from New York, he travels with his family, and they homeschool their children so they can all be together. And, you know, I asked him, what is the value you're trying to share with your children? What is it you're trying to give them as they grow? What is it you want them to take into the world? And he said, I want them to take the ability to be together and enjoy that time. And he teaches them how to forage out into the wilderness and to be able to find things that they can eat out in the wilderness, like these real kind of simple old school values. And again, I think we hear that more and more, that quiet revolution that can happen, that when enough people evolve or revolve, revolutionize their life in quiet ways, when enough people change their story and how they live their story, then the cultural story has to shift to accommodate that change in perspective. That we don't see it maybe all in one shift overnight, and maybe we don't want that kind of revolution that completely dismantles everything we have. Maybe it is something that moves more slowly and quietly and from a place of intention. Having some idea, some model of what would Eden look like, right? What does perfection look like? Restoring our planet to a livable capacity, providing water and food for our children and time to be together and listen to music and to dance and to experience conversation. I mean, maybe it really is as simple as all of that. But I think the challenge is, how do we stay with that story in light of all of the noise trying to capture our attention, right? All of the commercial entities out there wanting us to buy new phones and buy new cars and buy big houses and give up, you know, our comfort for the promise of greater comforts if we just have more money. And then the reality is, we do have to have money in this culture to survive. So unless we're going to create some complete alternative economy, and maybe that's what Uber and source funding or crowdfunding or Airbnb, all these alternative economies, maybe that also is an indication of the changes in the revolution, that we step away from that kind of mainstream, commercialized, corporate-owned lifestyle, and it's quietly creating, we're quietly creating a new paradigm, a new reality. And it won't change 6.4 billion people in, you know, even 10 years, but maybe it'll change 1 million, 2, 3, 5 million people in 5 years, and their generation of children share that story. And maybe that's how a revolution grows. And this has been a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. As always, I thank you for being a part of this community and this conversation. You can find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can email me to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, or you can subscribe to our podcast by going to iTunes and typing in A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. And I will be reporting to you from the road from this point on. I wish you well. I wish you love. I wish you a quiet revolution, and I appreciate you supporting Public Radio KCBX. We go out with a little classic from the Beatles.